The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place.
So what do I do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
This is wonderful advice. This is what I needed to hear.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are the best thing that has ever happened to people.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My mom was so good at getting her point across, making me feel guilty. I remember one time I called her. I said, "Hey, Mom, how's it going?" She said, not too good. I've been very weak." Ma, what's going on? Why are you so weak?" "I haven't eaten in 6 days." "Mom, you haven't eaten in 6 days. Why? Why haven't you eaten in 6 days?" She said, "I didn't want my mouth to be full in case you should call." Ho! Oh, she's good. You got to admit it. She's good. She used to do all kinds of things to keep me from leaving the house. I was about 16 years old, ready to head out a little bit. "Hey, Mom, I'll be back later." Raymond, before you go, paint the house." She was good. She was real good. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. I appreciate it so, so very much. This is E-Person Monday. The stack here on the phone is getting longer and longer and longer and longer. And sometimes when I let people know that I address their email, they're thinking, "What email?" Because it was 2.5 months ago. Some of them are more recent. But I just want to get to as many of them as I can. I try to answer every email in some small way. Many of the people say, can you give me guidance or advice? And because I get a lot, it's hard to do that. But I address some of them here on E-Person Monday, and I will refer them to maybe perhaps therapeutic websites where they could get a good Catholic worldview, because a lot of times that's what they're asking for in a therapist. Okay. Have you heard of the six stages of dying? There was a psychiatrist, a woman named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who said that when people are confronting death, perhaps a terminal illness or something that they know their mortality is close, and we all know our mortality is close, but it depends on what you mean by close. In the overall scheme of eternity, it's right next door. But in the world that we live in the temporal moment we occupy, we live like it's far off. But if you were to get an illness, some type of neurological disorder that had no cure, Ross said that you went through stages. And she identified six stages of death. Denial, rage, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I'm sorry, five stages. Denial, rage, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Now, this is not anything I have in front of me. I just remembered those from when I had to learn about it. She said when you first heard about it, you denied it. He said, "That's not going to happen. There's got to be a way around this. There's got to be a cure. There's got to be something I can do. Power of prayer. It's not going to happen." Then you get angry. "This shouldn't happen to me. This is unfair. How could a good God let this happening to me?" Then bargaining. What do I need to do to get out of this? How can I get out of this? Depression. Then when a reality hits you that this could be it. This is your walking out of this life, get depressed. And then finally, you're forced into acceptance, that this is the way it is and you have to accept it. Well, now there's really only one problem with Kubler-Ross's five stages of dying. Just one, small one. That's not the way it is. It's not the way it is. More modern research has said that people don't necessarily go through those five stages. They skip two. Sometimes they go in reverse. Sometimes they accept it right away quick. Sometimes there's no anger. In other words, it's all over the map. The best predictor of how people face their own mortality is how they face life. That would mean, that would make sense, wouldn't it? A faith-filled Christian person whose perspective is eternity, they deeply embrace the worldview, the idea that this is not all there is. This is not some, as the skeptics would say, this is not some neurotic pill that they take just to comfort themselves. No, they truly believe this is it. This is why we are here. We are here for eternity. They may be so much better at accepting their impending walking out of the earth. I had a friend of my mom's. Her name was Annie. Annie was great. And I appreciate Annie more now as I get older. And I just loved her beautiful common sense look at life. I remember visiting her in the living room. She was laying in her hospital bed. And she knew she was passing. She had cancer. And she said to me, "I've lived a good life. I've had a lot of years. This is how it is." And she said, and even more so, this is how it is if you're lucky. And I was trying to listen, you know, my psychology ears trying to listen for denial. There was no denial. It was acceptance all the way. And it was a comfortable acceptance. And as far as I know, as Annie wrestled with her cancer that slowly consumed her, she didn't go through any of those other stages. She didn't rage. She didn't bargain. She didn't deny. She didn't get depressed. When I saw her, she just was in a state of quiet acceptance. When my cousin died, I was very close to him. As a matter of fact, as cousins go, I was about as close to him as any cousin I had. And when you're Italian, your cousins are like your brothers and sisters. He died about a year and a half ago. And we had rekindled our relationship. When I was young, he was 7 years older than I was. When I was young, he used to just beat me in every sport we played. I had no chance against him in anything. In anything. And I hero worshipped him. He's my cousin. I just loved seeing him. And he played with me. I was 9 years old. He was 16 years old. He played with me. Wow. Was that cool? He'd hit the wiffle ball to me in my backyard, and I'd chase it and run it down and fire one to him. And he'd say, "Rame, good throw." And I just beamed for an hour and a half. And then we drifted apart because he was raising his family and I was raising my family. And there were long, long stretches where we didn't see each other. But then when his family was raised and my family was pretty much raised, we reconnected. We started going to ball games together and watching sports together. And we met for breakfast. And we were really once again Ray and Rich tight. And the seven-year difference wasn't any big deal now because we were both up there. And I remember visiting him in hospice. He looked at me and he said, "I didn't know it would be this hard." But up to that point, I saw a hopefulness in Rich. He didn't go through any of those stages. His stage was always hopeful, 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 hopeful. And then when he was right on the edge, then he accepted, then he knew. "I didn't think it would be this hard," he said. So it's interesting. Next time you hear somebody talk about the five stages of death,
just smile. Know that they don't have research support. Know that they even go against common sense. Nice little theory. And it appealed to an awful lot of people. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks who still believe it and still go with it. But for the most part, you die, whether peaceful or not, as you lived. That's the best predictor of how you will face your own death. I'm Dr. Ray. When we come back, your ePersons.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I repeat, I'm sure ad nauseum to the guys who are here, a line from Pope Benedict Emeritus now, who used to say over and over again, to be a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice, but the result of an event, an encounter, a meeting with the living God in the person of Jesus Christ. This and nothing less is what it means to be a Christian. So we said the new evangelization is new in ardor. That's a kind of old-fashioned word. What in the world is ardor? Ardor is zeal, fervor, passion. Are you passionate about Jesus? Passionate about Jesus. Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him?
I had two choices growing up in my Italian Catholic family. I was always worried about whether we would like what we had for supper, for lunch. So she always gave us two choices. Take it or leave it. And I always heard about the kids in China who didn't have anywhere near as much to eat as I did. This is ePerson Monday, where we get a chance to look into your ePersons. Now this one is, I just want to read this. This is not someone saying, here's my situation, let's talk about it. This is something that was prompted by a monologue that I did recently about my dad. The point I made about my dad was that he was just a decent, hard-working man who never complained. He just didn't. And I talked about his last days on earth, and even then he didn't complain. Well, this came from Rosemary. Dr. Ray, I loved listening to you share the story of your father. My dad, Salvatore Alfred Macchi, a Sicilian-American born in 1915, had to quit school. Too. Yeah, I've made the point that my dad quit school as a sophomore. He went to McKinley High School, which was where Rita Rizzo, now known as Mother Angelica, went to school. Pop was a freshman, I think, when Rita Rizzo was a senior. Had my dad,
this is Rosemary saying this, had to quit school too in the eighth grade to help support his family because his mother had died, leaving eight children. After he came back from the war, he married. But that didn't last. Okay, now she's talking about her father here. My mom, his wife, left him, fed up from being tied down and raising three young children. She was way too young and immature. She left him with lots of debt that he had to pay. And since he had custody of the children, he couldn't afford child care because my sister had medical problems that he had to pay for as well. Therefore, we had to live with my maternal grandparents. All right, so these grandparents were the parents of her mother, Rosemary's mother, who left her and her two siblings when they were young. Now, here's the part that touches me here. My father couldn't afford a car, which was not uncommon in those days. My grandparents didn't have a car on either side. Either side didn't have cars. He would walk 13 miles to see us every other weekend, then walk back. Now, I'm not really sure of the logistics here. Okay, 13 miles one way he walked to visit Rosemary and her siblings. Did he not have custody? Were they being raised by their grandparents? I don't know. It's not clear here. But the point being, he walked 13 miles one way to see them every other weekend and then walk back. I remember the holes in the bottom of his leather shoes. And we weren't allowed in the house during his visits. Now, I'm not sure what that means. Apparently, the grandparents said, no, your dad comes, you can't come in the house. So he would have to visit with us in the barn on cold days. Might I add, this was in New Hampshire, where the winters were brutal. My dad always wanted to be a good example to his grandchildren, and he went to adult high school in San Diego. Now, I made the observation that my dad went back and got his GED at age 59. Papa was just absolutely so proud. He was the oldest in the class. Rosemary says, my dad went to adult high school in San Diego, graduated at the age of 75. He got his high school diploma at age 75. Three strokes robbed him of his life. Before he died, he was surrounded by us three daughters and our mother, who by now had apologized for her behavior to us all. Last vivid picture I have of them is looking at each other and saying that they were very proud of their three daughters they had together and that they still loved each other. It is never too late, though it was 46 years in the making. I told Rosemary, you mind if I read that? Is that okay with you if I read that? And okay. Do I have enough time? Yeah, I got 5 minutes. Dr. Ray, in response to today's show on parents lending their kids money, we had some calls where the parents lent the children some money in good faith, and the children didn't pay them back. And the children had no intention of paying them back. And the children got mad when the parents asked for their money back, and not even asking in one big lump sum, just start paying it back. Oh, and I said, as a parent, you got to learn a lesson. You know, you judge who might be trustworthy, and if you miscalculate the first time around, you don't step into it the second time around, which is what I did. All right. Okay. I heard something that has resonated with me for years. I've lived by it. Served me well. I'd like to share it. Quote, never loan your kids any amount of money that you would be angry if they did not pay you back. And that's an interesting demarcation line. I might add this, though. For many, it is not the money. Now, there's an old saying, when people say it's not the money, it is the money. I went to this ball team and I left my hometown city because, not because they offered me twice the amount in the contract. It's not about the money. Well, much of the time it is about the money. But for many parents who lend their kids money and their kids don't pay them back, secondary is the money. Primary is the fact they're hurt. They gave the kids money to help them out for whatever the reason. They co-signed a loan, whatever they did. And the kids, essentially, it's a mark of disrespect, really, and especially in an ethnic family. It's big disrespect. So, she said, simply do not loan them again. Now, that was the point I made. I said, if you get burned once, learn about it. Unfortunately, I didn't. Do not loan them again if they do not pay it back the first time. Obviously, do not loan them an incredible amount the first time, because we want to establish trust and responsibility by loaning money to our kids. Yeah, I mean, we parents, we want to help our kids. We do, and sometimes we say, okay, I'm going to give you the down payment on a house. And then what you notice is that you're finding they're spending money on their own personal pursuits with no nod anywhere toward you in giving you back any of the money that they owe you. Not even $50 a month. I mean, most parents would be satisfied if their kids said, you know, Mom, I'm hurting, but I want to give you $50 every month or $100 every month. Most parents would say, okay, that's cool. I can live with that. But it's when the kids don't do anything and the parents watch the kids make sure that their own personal entertainment, traveling, goodies are taken care of first. My stepson borrowed $1,600 from me. I didn't get angry when I asked him when he was going to repay it. I simply asked when he plans on repaying it. Another time rolled around after this, and he asked to borrow more. I simply said, you didn't pay me back the first loan. Until you do, Bank of Melody is closed. Sorry. Well, Melody, I would just add one point. You don't need to say sorry. You didn't do anything wrong. We do that a lot. No, I can't give you that. Sorry. No, I'm not sorry I can't give you that. I'm glad I can't give you that because I learned a lesson. He accepted this and still has not paid that loan back as of yet. Nor do I remind him because that amount of money did not break us. It simply taught us that he has poor character when it comes to responsibility, which we can see in other areas of life. We still have a loving relationship with him. We just don't loan him anymore. And he is still not repaid it. And let's see, how many years has it been here? Let me look at this. 21 years. Well, he ain't going to. You know that. You know he's not going to repay that, Melody. That is okay with us. Because there is no amount of money that I'd loan my kids that if they did not repay it, it would sever our family. Yeah. And it didn't with me either. My child who borrowed that money, or was more like he didn't borrow it, but I had to pay for something I shouldn't have had to pay for. That's really where it was. And given that, we still have a good relationship, and the topic doesn't come up anymore. And that's by my own personal decision. It kind of sounds like the same as Melody is saying here. Good lesson. Good lesson. And she says the amount of money that would cause a break in a relationship, she said she wouldn't loan that much. Good demarcation line.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Who may be baptized into the Catholic faith? The Catholic Catechism tells us that baptism may only be administered to a person who has never been previously baptized. When an adult is baptized, he undergoes a preparation for the sacrament called the catechumenate. The candidate for baptism is called a catechumen. The catechumen should be properly initiated into the mystery of salvation and the practice of the evangelical virtues. They should also be introduced into the life of faith, liturgy, and charity of the people of God by successive rites. Baptism of infants is, the Catechism says, an immemorial tradition of the Church. Church law urges that a child be baptized as soon after birth as possible, in order that the baby not be denied the priceless grace of becoming a child of God as soon as possible. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good to have you with me on The Doctor's Inn. Sometimes people ask me, how did you raise 10 kids so close together in age? And at one point, they were all 12 and under. We had a simple rule. It really helped us a lot. You can't let them in the house all at the same time. Especially not during the holidays. You got the Christmas tree up. I can't count how many times the Christmas tree fell over. It was not good. It was not pretty. Our tree looked like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree within a few days after being set up. Kind of wish we had a dog and a cat so they could have torn it up because it probably would have looked better than what the kids did to it. By the way, just recently I painted over the wallpaper in our hallway and foyer. And it was kind of sad because in repainting the wallpaper, I noticed how many machine gun bullets had hit the wall at the bottom of the steps. Okay, it wasn't actually a machine gun. It was various cars, toys, shoes, rocks, box of wood, blow darts. Maybe it was a machine gun. But I felt like I was spackling away the memories. The wall looks good, though. It really does. Really does look good. Had to use one whale of a lot of spackle. All right, let's go to Tracy on the C-Person Monday. Hi, Dr. Ray. We have three boys, ages 14, 11, and 9. We've been trying for a couple of years to balance the use of electronics, mostly video games. We do monitor and control the amount of games, but find that they choose to not keep busy and do other things when not playing. I was going to say, well, what do they do? And then she just told me here. They instead choose to just mess around and drive their mom nuts. Okay, let me stop there. Tracy, if they're driving you nuts because they're just boys and boys play like bear cubs, then maybe you could work on not being driven nuts because they horse around. Or you could send them outside. My mom, I lived outside. Not because I wanted to, because my mom made me. Or if they're being destructive or they're nasty to each other, then this is occasion for discipline.
That's when your authority comes in. You have to be able to, for your own peace of mind and for the peace of the house, to discipline and to make it stick, whatever you want to do. Separate them, send them to rooms, write essays, do chores, however you want. The main provocateur goes outside, whatever. So I got to know what it means to say just messing around. Besides the times when they are gone for sports, getting them off the games is always noisy and stressful, even when giving them a five-minute heads up or just a set time. Now, what you're telling me here, Tracy, is that they don't accept when you say time's up or when you say it's 1 o'clock, game off. They don't accept it. Obviously, there's arguments going on. Just four more minutes. I just got to finish this one level. I've never been at this level before, and I just got to get this. And this happens every time. What you could do, I would suggest, is a little video rule. If you do not get off the game within 10 seconds of when I ask, tomorrow there is no game. Or 2 days there is no game. Whatever you want, Tracy, your mom. You make the rules. So if you're finding an argument each and every time, that's telling you you need to set up a structure that says, here's what I'm expecting, here's what will happen if you fight it. That's okay. You're allowed to do that. That is much kinder than fighting with them every time you want them to get off. All right, there's more here. My husband desperately wants them to have a hobby when at home, so they don't always rely solely on electronics for entertainment. Tracy, they're not going to rely solely on electronics for entertainment if you limit it even more. Because what's happening is, and you're saying this, even with your limits, they're becoming obsessed. I don't want to use the word addicted. They're becoming obsessed with this. So that's a signal. It's telling you, all righty, even though we're trying to put limits on this, they're pushing those limits. Even though we're trying to keep this in some kind of balance, they're taking it out of balance. All right, then it's time to cut back, restructure, set up conditions. Right now, we took away the games. Something we seem to do every couple of months. No, Tracy, don't do it every couple of months. Set up the rule. You fight me, it's gone the next day. It's gone the next 2 days. There will be no fights over games. That's it. When I make the request, you have 10 seconds. I'm not going to make a second request. I'm not going to say, you got 6 seconds left. You want to lose it tomorrow? If you want to lose it tomorrow, just push me. No, Trace, you're not going to do that. You're simply going to say, this is my new rule. It is not really the games, Dr. Ray, that we have an issue with, but what they do when not playing. I just don't know if we're handling this the right way. Well, there isn't some right way formula, Tracy. In most respects, how a parent chooses to handle something is the right way. Because you're the parent. It's your house. It's your rules. It's your video game stance. Another parent can say, well, I think they need to have more time in the video games. I mean, that's what kids do nowadays. That doesn't mean if you don't do that, you're not right. You're right because it's your house. It's your standards. It's your expectations. When you say, when they are not on the video games, they're driving me crazy. You don't have to ask yourself, but you could ask yourself, what does driving me crazy mean? Are they misbehaving? Because if they're misbehaving, now you're dealing with sibling quibbling. And that's something you're going to have to discipline. House rule. If they're not misbehaving, if they're just horsing around, they're being obnoxious, but they're not doing anything destructive or hurtful to each other, anything like that, then you got to decide what is your tolerance level. How far can you go before you're being driven crazy? You know what my wife used to do when the kids were little? She said, when she felt herself getting up to her limit, everybody get a book, sit down somewhere and read. Now, the preschoolers couldn't, but they got a book to look at. And if you didn't do that, if you resisted mommy, well, then you went up to your room or you sat on the steps or you went to the corner, something happened to you. You better listen. Because this was my wife's way of pulling the plug when she had to before the kids drove her over the edge. That was her particular approach to not being driven crazy.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5. Is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I, you know, made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction. But they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, you know, from mom and dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. That's, my generation got too much of that, was, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly, affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about. And you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
I wrote a new book called Wheat and Tares as a way to approach the sexual abuse crisis by clergy in the Catholic Church. I hope that this book would be something that came out of my prayer for a lot of months and would be able to help inform your prayer.
Wheat and Tares, Restoring the Moral Vision of a Scandalized Church by Father Mitch Pacwa. Now available at EWTNRC.com.
C.S. Lewis said, the process of growing up is to be valued for what we gain, not for what we lose. That's something I got to keep telling myself. So I go into that weight room and struggle harder to put up the weight that I used to put up effortlessly when I was 20 years younger. But I did gain things. 7 more pounds. What else did I gain? A better portfolio, you know. Okay, this is Dr. Ray Garandy, and I thank you for joining me Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. The Doctor is In. This is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio Communications and the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. It can be heard on some, I don't know, close to 400 stations nationwide, as well as Sirius Satellite Channel 130. Used to be on 160, which was closer to my IQ, but 130 now it kind of dropped. And 160, in all my defense, was my IQ before children. Fortunately, most of them grew up and moved on before my IQ plummeted down into the 90s. There is some regain of IQ when the parents leave when the kids leave the house, but you never really come back to where you were. There's a certain amount of structural damage that takes place. This is E-Person Monday, where we look at your emails that you send in. It's from Elizabeth. My 18-year-old niece asked to live with me in the fall to save money for college. Now, stop the tape. As I said before, when these come in, I put them in the e-person bin to be addressed.
Now, this one was from June 5th. I forget the content of the e-person, and I like it that way because it more closely resembles somebody calling the program, giving me details, and I don't know what's coming. So I like it that way. Now, my first question here, for just reading that sentence, was, okay, so she wants to live with her aunt to save money for college. I'm assuming she has a mom and or dad. Are they going to charge her rent so she can live with aunt for free? Or mom and dad said, no, you can live here for free. So if that's the case, the mom and dad said, you can live here, then it is the purported reason, saving money for college, might not be the reason. Okay, let me say that again. My 18-year-old niece asked to live with me in the fall to save money for college. But I know she can get a job living with her parents. Okay, so that answers the question. She can live with her parents for the same amount of money. Zero. Then Elizabeth says, but I sense she wants to have some independence. Code word? Freedom. My guess would be, and this is something I'm going to recommend that Elizabeth explore, my guess would be that this 18-year-old wants to be free of mom and dad's rules. She doesn't like them. Or she may tolerate him, but she figures auntie is a little more cool. And we'll see if that unfolds anywhere in this e-person. What questions should I be asking her to make sure this is the best for her and for me? I'm a 40-year-old single Catholic working woman, stable in my working career for 15 years and a homeowner for 10 years now. Okay, so Elizabeth's living a fairly independent life herself. She's not had children. She's single. And she's saying, what do I ask my niece? Kind of an interview. If you're going to live here, what do you expect about living here? Elizabeth, I probably would get straight in my own mind what my conditions are. Curfew? Help around the house? Respect? Social media time? TV? You know, just because she's 18 does not mean that she automatically has total freedom and she just lives at your place as a place to hang out in between everything else she wants to do. I think the questions you have to ask surround what you expect from her, and watch her face, watch her reaction as your questions make it clear that you're going to have rules. Now, my next question, we'll see if we can get to this in this e-person, is how does she see you? What is it about you that I want to go live with my aunt? Let's see if we've got anything more here. Well, this may shed some light on it. I have always tried to be the fun aunt. Aha! So she sees you as cool, enjoyable, and I think I'm safe in saying you don't have any rules on her. You've never had any rules on her. Why would you have any rules on her? You're the fun aunt. You do things together. You go shopping together. Whatever activities you guys share, that's what you've done. And perhaps your niece has extrapolated, well, all right, this aunt's a lot cooler than my parents. This aunt will certainly see things much more my way than my parents do. Now, if that's the case, you're going to find that out as you talk to her and ask her. And by the way, this doesn't mean you have to accept her living there just because she wants to. My niece and I seem to have similar personalities. Now, I don't know what that means, but I think it's coming up. And as my mom has said, I was the most difficult of her 10 children. It makes me nervous. All right, let's look at this logically here, Elizabeth. If you, according to your mother, were the toughest to raise of the 10 kids, then we could assume that you were a bit rebellious or obstreperous. I like that word. You know, don't get to use that very often. I get to use it because I deal with a lot of behavior problem kids, so obstreperous is a good word for behavior. Recalcitrant, that's another one you don't get to use very often, but it fits behavior problem kids. If, in fact, you were the one who most challenged the rules, most challenged the limits, were the one that your mother got most frustrated with, and then you said, my niece is a lot like me, what are you basing this on? Now, I got to assume that you're basing this on the fact that you have seen how your niece has behaved through her earlier teen years with her parents. Which leads me to the second point I'd like to make. I think you better talk to her parents, not just her. Ask them how they see this potential situation. Ask them why they think that their daughter wants to come and live with you. Find out if, in fact, you are a, in football, you would be the outlet pass. You'd be the safety pass. In other words, it's not working out on their main plan. They called the play. The play is we raise you through 18, and we hope to keep raising you as you go to college, but that's not working out. All right, Auntie is the outlet pass. She's plan B. She's the audible call. You got to find that out. You have to see if indeed she wants to come to you because she's battling it out with her parents. You have to see that her parents are looking at this saying, yeah, I'll tell you what, we've had trouble with her. We've had a fill. So maybe it is better you go live with your aunt. Now, if you still want to do that, that's fine. I'm not saying don't. I'm just saying if you're asking, how do I size this up? I think that's how you do it. Okay? This is Dr. A. Thank you for joining me. And I think we'll have time for one more e-person when we return.
You had it right on the money again.
Dr. Ray has more great advice soon. Don't go anywhere.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
In the church, we speak of seven gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, knowledge, loyalty, courage, and reverence or fear of the Lord. When I speak about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and these gifts come, they give you the ability to go beyond your strength. If you're struggling to be a good person, a good member of your religion, you know it's a struggle and you don't always make it. I've been at it many, many decades, and I still struggle and trip and fall and have holes in my socks. Struggling to be a good person, something that we need help at. And this help comes to us by these gifts of the Holy Spirit.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
The EWTN home video highlight for August is Lourdes with the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word. Go on pilgrimage with Father Joseph Mary Wolfe and Father John Paul Mary Zeller to the healing waters of Lourdes, where St. Bernadette first encountered Our Lady, and where all are now called to conversion. Order your DVD set at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
To have you with me. Dr. Ray, got to hurry to it to get this e-person in before the end. I have two daughters expecting babies. One lives same town as we do. The other is out of state. My husband and I have a business, and we periodically have customers come to our home. We've been attending outdoor masses both during the week and on Sundays. We go to the grocery store, pharmacy as needed. We visit with neighbors, etc. Initially, I exercise great caution, but due to the very, very low amount of infection in our town, I'm truly not concerned about contracting the COVID-19 virus. Our daughters have said that the only way we will be able to see them and their children, whom we've not seen in 2.5 months, and the new babies, is if we completely quarantine for 2 to 3 weeks before their due dates. Meaning we don't leave the house except to pick up groceries. They've given us instructions regarding even purchasing gas. They're professional, well-educated, and I respect their opinions. What? Well, writer, whom asked me to keep this anonymous, I see so much of this. Young adult children, and by the way, if you look at the statistics, the people most distressed by the COVID-19 situation are those under 30, 35. Believe it or not, those are the ones most distressed. The elderly, in some respects, who are most at risk, seem to be less distressed about all this. Maybe they've lived through a lot of tough stuff. But the young ones, they seem to be very panicky, more so than some of the older ones. You're stuck. Two options, reasonable or unreasonable. If you want to see the grandkids, you got to do what they say. Now, if you have a business, as you said you do, and people come to your home for your business, then you can't. You got to run your business. You can't simply say, okay, we're shutting down our business for 2 weeks. You're probably going to have to Skype or whatever else you do, FaceTime, to see the kids. And hopefully your professional daughters will recognize that the risk, hopefully, will get less and less. And if you social distance and wear a mask, they'll permit you. You can ask them about conditions. But I have seen this. You're not the only one to write me or talk to me about this. I have seen this. Young adult children. And believe it or not, predominantly among the more professionally educated young adult children who will tell their parents, you can't come here. You can't come here unless you meet these conditions. That's their point. Interestingly enough, I mean, even the chances of any little child getting the illness are minuscule in terms of also not necessarily getting it, but having a severe case of it. Virtually zero. So, you know, I oftentimes say to young parents like that, well, then, for heaven's sakes, don't put them in a car. Because, my gosh, the odds of them getting hurt in a car, that's the number one killer of children. That's what you got to be scared of. As I say it tongue-in-cheek. So I guess what I'm saying, Grandma, is that you pretty much have to acquiesce to their conditions. You're not going to convince them otherwise. Forget it. Give it up. Ask if there is any qualifiers they'll allow. Well, you know, will they allow you come and sit in the back patio or where the deck or wherever and see the kids from 6 feet away outside? I mean, that's virtually totally safe. Or flat out, no way, no how, you expose yourself to other people, and you could easily be a carrier at any time, and we don't want you coming into our house carrying that thing. So if they rigidly adhere to, nope, under no conditions unless you strictly quarantine for 2 weeks. And it's interesting that both of them think like that. I've seen situations where one thinks like that and the other doesn't, but both of them think like that. So I imagine they talk to each other a lot. At that point, you're sort of a casualty of this in another hidden way, which is you can't see your grandchildren, personally anyway. So you have to decide. If you say, I want to see my grandkids no matter what, so I'm going to quarantine, then that's your decision, all right? But either way, try not to try not to have resentment toward your daughters. Sadly, a high percentage of our population has been just scared to death, absolutely scared to death, scared beyond the actual risk. And because they've been hammered with it so much relentlessly by the media, they've reacted. So try not to be resentful toward them because of the conditions they have put upon you. Gotta go. I thank you, Andrew Krucek, for operating that board and all the breaks and everything else we do on this program. The doctor is in. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand. Are you allowed to do that? Can you hold them by the hand? Use Purell, maybe.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.